Ruth and I very much look forward to this. You guys have a wonderful fellowship here, and every time we've been here, it's just been a blessing. And so we really, on our calendar, have circled this one and glad to be back. Now, a number of you, we have remembered your names. That means you're rather notorious in our memory. But some of the others we've tried to pick up. So if I call you brother or sister, it probably means I forgot your name. So please help us out if we need to. Or if we've never met you, we hope you'll come up and let us know who you are. It's just a real blessing to be here. When I got the note from the pastor about the theme, I was very excited about that, standing in awe of the Great Commission and all that that means. And we're going to be talking about all that that means this week. It really is standing in awe of the Lord himself, because the Great Commission is about the Lord. And so we're going to be beginning in the morning service with that theme. And I'll say a little bit more about where we're going to go in the four evenings that we'll be together tonight through Wednesday night. But for Sunday school, I wanted to do something that really isn't directly related to your theme, but it is, because it's part of the Great Commission emphasis that we're looking at. But it really came out of a burden that came when I joined Baptist World Mission almost 13 years ago. We began traveling on the road doing missions conferences, and it was amazing to me the number of people that came up to me and said, "Brother Stedman, the way we do missions is broken. Deputation is broken, and furlough is broken." And I asked them to explain what they meant, and I found out they really didn't have a very good idea about what they were saying. And so it occurred to me that there are a lot of people in good churches who do not understand how someone goes from being called by God in their own heart before the Lord to arriving on the field. They don't understand deputation. They don't understand what furlough is. And so I put together a little presentation, and if we can put it up back there, it's called "God Has Called Me to the Mission Field, What Now?" I mean, where do we go from here? And it has 12 points. Now, let me give a disclaimer. This has nothing to do with the 12 points of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? Just so you'll understand. 12 is not a spiritual number that somehow gives us mystical understanding this morning. It's just that happened when I sat down and laid it out. I ended up with 12 points. So we're talking today about God has called me to the mission field, what now? A subtitle of this is How to Become a BWM Missionary. Baptist World Mission has just under adult missionaries serving in 51 countries. And I personally believe it is a wonderful mission agency. But I really am not teaching this morning about how other agencies do it. I mean, many of the fundamental Baptist agencies probably do what we do to some degree, but what I'm presenting is what we do. Now, let me point out very importantly, though this morning when one of the guest missionaries came in, he had a BIMI little button on, and I was teasing him about that. But I just want to say that there should be no competition between wonderful, godly mission agencies. We are in this together for the glory of Jesus Christ. And so I'm thrilled with the three missionary families we've met today and excited about this week. And we're going to talk about it. But this is more unique to what Baptist World Mission does. So let's take our Bibles and go to Acts chapter 13. That's where we're going to begin. You say, "Brother Stedman, why?" Well, because that's where New Testament missions begins in our Bibles. There was at the church in Antioch certain prophets and teachers, it says in verse 1, as Barnabas and Simeon that was called Niger, and Lucius of Cyrene, and Manaen, which had been brought up with Herod the Tetrarch and Saul. Now, what had happened? You remember that the New Testament work of God began at Jerusalem, and then there came great persecution, and those that went everywhere under persecution scattered with went preaching the gospel. Some went as far as Antioch, about 300 miles north of Jerusalem. There they won some Jews to Christ and some Gentiles to Christ. And they sent predominantly a Jewish congregation, but some Gentiles there sent to Jerusalem to get some help, and they sent Barnabas. Barnabas went up there. He secured the newly converted Saul of Tarsus and brought him over. And by the time we get to verse 1, there are five men serving in leadership at Antioch, And Barnabas is apparently the senior pastor. You say, how do you know that? Because there is always order in God's Word, and Barnabas is mentioned first. He obviously is the one who went there from Jerusalem to lead the church, so he was no doubt the senior pastor. I find it interesting, one commentator said that Paul, or Saul, was probably the youth pastor because he's mentioned last in the order, and you always mention the youth pastor last on the church letterhead. So I don't know if that's really true or not, but nonetheless, these five men were serving the Lord in leadership in this wonderful, vibrant church. Then notice what happened. As they, the church, and its five leaders, ministered to the Lord and fasted, the Holy Ghost said to the church, separate me, Barnabas and Saul, for the work whereunto I have called them. So this begins with the calling of God. So that's where we start. God has called me to the mission field. What now? Number one, we want to see, okay, are we going? Is it turned on? Okay. Okay. Are we going? Thank you. That would help. All right. Good. Okay. We're going to talk about this through. I'm going to give you the outline. If you want to take notes, that's fine. If you don't want to take notes, but you would like a copy of the outline, you can email me. I'll be glad to send that to you. But the first thing we are to do, if we're understanding that, is to solidify your call. Okay. God has called me to the mission field. What? You know, it's very important to understand that in the New Testament, the word kaleo, which is the word called, it's used many, many times throughout the New Testament, but it's only used four times relating to vocational ministry. Now, what do I mean by that? A vocation, a job, being a pastor, being a missionary, full-time gospel ministry. It is only used four times relating to full-time gospel ministry. Is it okay if I move around some? Okay, good, good. I just want to make sure I've got to not break the camera and keep him happy, okay? But four times it is used. Twice really do not relate to us today. They were apostolic. Romans 1:1, Paul called to be an apostle. There are no apostles today. 1 Corinthians 1:1, Paul called to be an apostle. Same thing. But the other two usages in the New Testament vocationally of this word called relate to missions. I find that very interesting. Now, I believe pastors are called by God. I believe that a Christian school teacher can be called by God to that vocation. But the word is actually used vocationally for mission, so we can really make the application for missions. One is used here. God called the first two missionaries, Paul and Barnabas. The other usage is in Acts 16, where Paul, on the second missionary journey with Silas, they're not knowing what to do. They're in Asia Minor, but God is shutting the doors, and he has what we call the Macedonian vision, the Macedonian call, and they were called over into Europe. So one is a call to the gospel ministry of missions. The other one is to a new location. So we could say that one call is vocational, the other one is locational. You know, that's true of your pastor. There was a time in your pastor's life when God called him into the gospel ministry. And then God called him to the mission field. That's Acts 16. But then God had some other plans, and God eventually called him to Crooked Creek. That's Acts 16. So the thing we're focusing on here is this Acts 13 call. This is where a person is called by God to full-time vocational ministry. So, in dealing with that, I've got three questions up there for you. Number one, is it a burden or a call? You know, a lot of people get confused about the matter of calling versus burden. Can I say it this way? A call is someone externally speaking to you. Now, if I were to illustrate it this way, and I have my phone here, I'm watching my clock, but if I were to have the phone ring this morning and it was my daughter from South Carolina calling me, it would be a person outside of me calling to speak to me. That's the meaning of the word kaleo. Or if we're staying at the Bachmans, they're doing a great job, but if I need something and I were to go to the bottom of the steps and I yell up to him, I would be calling him. You see, a call is from the outside. It's not something you generate within yourself. It's not really your response. It is someone speaking to you, a person. And in the New Testament, the call of God is God speaking to the heart through His Word by His Spirit. It is not something you generate. It is not even about your response, because some people resist the call of God. So the thing I want to point out is a call is from God. It's not from you. But a burden is your response. It is from you. It's the response of your heart. We're going to see missionaries this week to New Zealand. We're going to see missionaries to Mozambique. We have a brother here serving with Rock of Ages, and we're going to see pictures. And if you're like me, my heart is going to be stirred. And I will have a burden for what I see with my eyes. But that does not mean that God is calling me to those fields. It's my human response. Now, why is that distinction very important? Sometimes people think that a burden for something is the same thing as God calling you. But can I quote Dr. Daryl Champlin, who was my dear friend for many, many years, a great missionary to Africa and South America. He's with the Lord now. He said, a burden can fail you, but the call of God will chase you to the end of the world. And that's exactly right. You know, some people go to the mission field simply with a burden. They have this idea of the people in, say, Mozambique on the port calling out, come help us, Americans. We love you. We want what you have. And so they go to the mission field and they get there and they found out they don't like Americans. Matter of fact, they hate Americans. And they don't want what you've got. And the food doesn't taste good. And the housing's not very good. And they can't buy gasoline because there's shortages. And they quit because all they had was a burden. And a burden can change. A burden can fail. But if God calls, that is so important. So when someone comes and applies to Baptist World Mission, the first question we ask them, tell us about your call from God. It is foundational. The second question is called to do what? What is a missionary called to do? And you say, Brother Stedman, you're not going to get through 12 points in the next 30 minutes. Well, this foundational stuff up front will go a little slower, but it's really, really important. Called to do what? My wife and I were on a plane heading down to Haiti, and across the aisle was a cowboy. He was from Oklahoma, or somewhere, Texas, I knew from hearing him talk to the stewardess. So he was sitting right across the aisle, and I decided to engage him for the gospel, hopefully. And I spoke to him. I said, why are you going to Haiti? He said, I'm a missionary. I'm an oak from Oklahoma, and I have some oil wells, and I'm going down. I go down and do mission work. I said, well, tell me about it. He said, well, I go down, and I feed children twice a year. I'm a missionary. Now, let me ask you a question. Is that being a missionary? So I look at my Bible, and I do not find that going to a foreign country twice a year to feed hungry children is anywhere defined as missions. Now, why do I use that illustration? There is so much today that is being called missions that is not New Testament missions. Now, it's actually fine for a man to use his own money to go down and feed hungry children. And any missionary will give food to a hungry child out of human compassion, but that's not New Testament missions. So what is New Testament missions? We're talking about knowing you're called. Called to do what? There is a three-legged stool of New Testament missions. It is evangelism, discipleship, and church planting. And I illustrate it by the three-legged stool that I sat on when I was milking a cow as a teenage boy in Tennessee. If you have a four-legged stool and you're milking a cow, the fourth leg gets in the way of the bucket and the udder, okay? It doesn't work well. But if you only have a two-legged stool, you stand up, what happens? Stool goes over. So anybody worth their salt milking a cow needs a three-legged stool. It stands and it does the job. Missions has a three-legged stool. It is evangelism, it is discipleship, and we would include in that leadership training, and then also church planting, organizing believers into a New Testament church. If you pull out one of those three legs, missions will fall. If you don't evangelize, if you don't plant churches. So that is really important. So when a person is being called like Saul of Tarsus and Barnabas to be the New Testament missionaries, they are called by God for evangelism, discipleship, and church planting. And that is what we read in the book of Acts. And then the third question, called to go where? It's very important, again, that we understand Acts 16. It is clear that God does call people to locations. So, you know, we don't just, when someone comes to Baptist World, we don't just assign them a place. They need to know that God's called them to the mission field. And eventually, if they don't know at the beginning, by the time they get ready to raise support, they need to know where they're going. Because God calls. So the first thing that's very important is that you solidify your call. And then Romans 12, 1 and 2. We're not going to, for time, have the opportunity to look at these. I've actually taught this over a period of a few hours, so you're getting the Reader's Digest condensed version this morning, just for an overview. But the second thing is surrender your life. Romans 12, 1 and 2. Paul says there, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Why? That you may prove, experientially is the idea, prove, what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So, Paul is saying in that great theological statement, after the first 11 chapters of theology, he says, if you're going to do the will of God, give God your body. And so what we say is, if God's called you to the mission field, surrender. Don't just play around and talk about it. Now, let me ask you a question. Pastor, can I ask for kind of a church vote this morning? It's not about money, so we're okay. Okay, church vote. How many of you believe that we are Mormons? Raise your hand. How many do not believe that we're Mormons? Raise your hand. Okay. Well, it carries. The church does not believe that we're Mormons, and that's good. So that's the church vote. Now, why is that important? Mormons have this idea of what a missionary is, that somehow the church sends you for 2 years on a short-term missionary endeavor, and then after 2 years, you've discharged your responsibility to missions, and you come back and spend the rest of your life making money. Now, there are a lot of other reasons why we're not Mormons. But relating to missions, they have a very perverted view of missions. And you know, in some churches, in our fundamental circles, there is a tendency toward that same concept. Now, what do I mean? I am all in favor of short-term mission trips. You know, people in the church going to help missionaries. But folks, if God has called you to the mission field to be a full-time vocational missionary, don't try to fulfill that call by taking a couple of mission trips and then living your life for yourself. You give your life full-time to this matter of New Testament missions. So you surrender to the call of God. And then number three, in the you can see on the overhead there, solicit your local church's confirmation. Look with me, Acts 13, 2 and 3 again. As they ministered to the Lord and fasted, the Holy Ghost said, separate me, Barnabas and Saul, for the work whereunto I have called them. So this is telling us that God, sometime previous to this, had in their hearts called Paul and Barnabas to be full-time vocational missionaries, right? But then notice, and when they had fasted and prayed and laid their hands on them, they sent them away. So God called the church in verse 2 to send Paul and Barnabas after they'd already been called personally, and then they sent them away. Now, who sends missionaries? Somebody tell me. The local church does. Well, you say, I heard somebody say God, and you're absolutely right. Look at verse 4. So they being sent forth by the Holy Ghost. So God sends missionaries, and local churches send missionaries. Now, what that tells me is, if the local church is listening to God, they'll be on the same page, God and the local church. Now, why is that important, who sends missionaries? Because, folks, mission agencies do not send missionaries. There are some mission agencies who wrongly believe, and I'm not trying to be critical, but wrongly believe that they're the primary person in that missionary getting to the field and being successful on the field. That is not the case. A local church is the sending agency. The mission board comes alongside as a contractual helper to help the local church and that missionary get to the field and be successful. But we should never disengage the local church from being the primary sending agency. Important to understand. So what that means is that when someone is called by God and they've affirmed that in their soul and they surrendered to it, who do they talk to next? They don't call Baptist World. They talk to their pastor next. Because if God calls them, God will call the church to send them. Now, we've had it. I was a pastor for about 30 years, and we've had it both ways. I've had some people come to me and say, God's called me to the mission field, and I say to them, no. you know, I know you've been called to marry that lady in the church that doesn't like you. I know you've been called to this and called to that, and God's not calling you to the mission field. Some people don't have an understanding. They have trouble with that. But we had a couple who were in our church. He was a deacon, a leader, wonderful servants of Christ. He came to me one day and said, "Pastor, I believe God's calling me to the mission field." And I said to him, "What took you so long? We've all known that for a long time, that God's been working in your heart." And it was obvious that God was speaking to the church, and they were sent to the country of Brazil. So my point is, folks, it is the church in Acts 13 that lays hands on them and sends them practically. The best indicator, objectively, of the call of God is the local church to affirm that that person's been called. So if someone comes to you and they only come on Sunday morning, and maybe they show up this week to missions conference and they see the slides and they come down the aisle weeping and say, "God's called me to go to New Zealand or Mozambique." But they're not faithful. They're a novice. They're not really following the Lord. Then don't lay hands on them. Because you have a responsibility for being the filter for the New Testament missionary. So number four, after that, you select a mission board. Acts 15:41. Let's go over there. Just a few pages. This is after the first missionary journey. Paul has come back to Antioch with Barnabas. God's done some wonderful things. He and Barnabas have an argument over taking John Mark, who quit. And so Paul chose Silas and went on the second missionary journey. Look at Acts 15:40. "And Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren under the grace of God. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, confirming the churches." Now, what does it mean to confirm the churches? The word "confirm" is a Greek word which literally can be translated to strengthen. So, let's think about this for a moment, okay? I want you to follow my reasoning. Local churches send missionaries, not mission agencies. Paul is a missionary. He goes out, establishes churches. That means they were established, they had pastors, they were autonomous, they were independent. He comes back to Antioch and reports, but then he goes back to those independent Baptist churches that he planted, and he comes alongside them to strengthen them. Why would he do that? They're autonomous. They have their own pastor. They're going to send their own missionaries. What is this missionary guy doing coming alongside the church now? Well, Paul was very much, in a sense, doing on the second missionary journey what we do as administrators at Baptist World. We come alongside you to help you, to strengthen you, to do some things that maybe you're not quite as prepared for to do as we are. We may have some expertise. You say, "Well, Brother Stedman, what could a mission agency offer for a church that the church can't do?" So I want to illustrate it by putting your pastor on the spot. Okay, pastor, let's say it is Thanksgiving and you're at home carving the turkey for your wife, and you have a missionary sent out of your church that is not with a mission agency. They're just sent out by Crooked Creek. You're responsible for getting all of their money. You're responsible for their insurance, everything. You do all of that. And they're in Kenya or some country in the bush, in the jungle, and you get a call saying they need an emergency medical evacuation right now. What would you do? You're carving the turkey.
I'd say, "Oh, Lord, help us."
You would pray. That is a good answer. You would pray. But what would you do after you pray? I mean, they're depending upon you, and they need you right now to get them out of the jungle where they are. What would you do?
Probably make some calls.
Make some calls.
And, counsel.
Counsel.
And then we've got to figure out where the money's
going to
come from.
Okay. And in the meantime, they're over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you see the problem, don't you? Okay. Let me tell you a story, and he gave all the right answers. Your pastor is very wise, but his wisdom is in the fact that he works with a mission agency. Let me tell you a true story. My wife and I were in Kenya, sitting in the back room. They have a little room in the complex at Kenya where the missionaries live, where their guests are. And this was like 10 years ago, and I got a phone call from Mike Williquit, who is our financial director at Baptist World Mission. all of our missionaries have all of our cell numbers. It was Thanksgiving Day. Mike was on the road going to Wisconsin. I was in Kenya with a missionary. And the administrator, I'm not sure where he was for this particular missionary that day, but we were all scattered. Mike got the call from Lorraine Fitzgerald. Her husband, Buddy, in the jungles of Peru, had come down with hemorrhagic dengue fever, and it can be fatal. You bleed through your pores. Very often people do not survive. So Lorraine was frantic. We need an emergency medical evacuation right now. They had gotten up to the capital of Lima, and the doctors there had said, we really can't help you. We don't have what you need. You need to be medevaced right now or your husband's going to die. So Mike called me in Kenya on my cell phone and said, Brother Stedman, we need an emergency medical evacuation right now. I said literally one word. I said, go. He hung up the phone. He got on the phone. We have contacts with people that can put a plane on the ground anywhere in the world today. And that very day, we had a private jet with nurses and gurneys, and we medevaced Buddy and Lorraine and the children from there to Miami, where they had a special place to treat Buddy. Buddy was in intensive care for a week. He survived. Lorraine, on the plane, came down with lighter symptoms of non-hemorrhagic dengue, and one of the children, and they all did well, and today they're back in the jungles of Peru serving the Lord. I was sitting across from their sending pastor at a board meeting of Baptist World Mission, and he began to weep. And he said to me, Brother Stedman, thank you for saving Buddy's life. And I said, I'm not the hero of this. I said, the hero of this is you, the pastor, because you were wise enough to recognize there are some things that our church may not be able to do, but we partner with someone that can help us do it to care for our missionary. And folks, that is true in many realms. Do you realize that your church, if you receive money for a missionary and you're the sending, if you handle all of the money in and out from your church and you send it overseas, you are considered by the IRS as a branch office of the IRS. And you're looked at very critically. And if you handle money wrong in sending it overseas, there's a word that the IRS uses. It's called money laundering. And people can go to jail for that. Our chief financial secretary takes classes every year on new IRS regulations, how to send money overseas without getting anybody into trouble. So you don't have to do that at your church. So what I'm saying is that it's very important when a person is called by God that you make sure that you're called and you make sure your church is behind you. Then you connect with a good mission agency. And that is very important. And then send your application number 5 to the board. When a person has determined God has called me, they've talked to their pastor, you need to call Baptist World, Brother Stedman, or Dr. Kennedy, our deputation director, one of the folks in the office. We will send you a candidate questionnaire. We'll do a doctrinal affirmation with you. We ask you about all that you believe about things. We want a letter of home church certification. We contact personal references, and we ask them for other references, personal history, medical history. We do all of our research before we agree to take you on as a missionary appointee. And that usually takes a couple of months. If you pass that muster, then we invite you, number 6, to secure board appointment. You come to one of 2 board meetings a year. We're having another one in about a week and a half here. Actually, it starts a week from tomorrow. We'll be up in Calvary Baptist Church in Watertown, Wisconsin. We always meet in one of the churches of our board members. And so we'll be up there, and we appoint new missionaries. So they come, they give a personal interview by a subcommittee. We have a doctrinal review. It's kind of like a mini ordination council. We ask them questions about all those things they wrote down on paper that they believe to see if they can articulate their faith. And then they give their testimony before the full board with their pastor hopefully present. We invite the pastor to come and be a part of all of that representing the church. Now, that's really important. We have 32 board members. I head up the administration of Baptist World. That means we carry out board policy. We serve the missionaries. We have 15 on our staff, Decatur, Alabama, where our offices are. That's the administration. But the actual board is 32 pastors of local churches, independent Baptist churches from around the United States. And so they appear before the board, and the board either agrees, yes, or maybe they need a little work. Maybe they need a year's internship. They're not quite ready. Or we say no. And, you know, it's obvious that somehow something was missed. But that the latter two are very rare, because we work with a pastor. And if the pastor's ready, most of the time, 99% of the time, they're ready as well. And then number seven, you strategize with accountability leaders. Luke chapter 14. As soon as the new missionary is appointed, they become a missionary of this world mission. Where do we go from here? We need to raise support. We need to get to the field. So they immediately begin to strategize with their accountability leaders. And there are three of them initially. And the first and initial thing that we start working on is preparing a budget for the field. Because if they're going to go out and raise support, pastors are going to say, how much do you need to raise? And that's a really important question. So they strategize with three accountability partners: Mike Willequit, our financial director, the future administrator that will be over them on the field where they'll be serving, and their pastor. Now why? Mike Willequit, our financial director, has a database with every city in the world in that database and its cost of living. And we can get pretty close knowing where they're going to be near a city in a part of the world, what it's going to cost them to live. But then the administrator, who has all of our administrators are former missionaries in the regions where they administrate, they know what it's actually like, boots on the ground, for other missionaries to live, and so they factor it in. And then thirdly, the pastor, because we've actually had it happen where we had Mike Willequit, we had a missionary going with six children to England, very expensive. And we set a budget with Mike Willequit and their administrator, a preliminary budget, and we sent it to the pastor. And the pastor said, you got to be kidding me. They've got to raise that much money? And he resisted. Well, what that tells us is other pastors are going to resist when we tell them that much money. So that pastor sat down with them and said, you know, we need to sharpen the pencil here. Because, you know, we know the level at which you live, and maybe we can be a little frugal in this area and we can trim it down, not to make it hard for the missionary, but to make it realistic for supporting churches. So that work is all done. We establish a realistic budget. We establish expectation concerning practical life issues. I mean, they're going to begin on deputation. What does that mean? Practical life issues. Let me read a few of them. What do you do to finance your family while you're raising support? You've hit the road. You don't have a job, but you don't have any support coming in yet. We have a formula for helping that to work out. We talk to them about schooling their children. What are you going to do with your kids when they're on the road? Are you going to homeschool? Are you going to van school? You know, what are you going to do? What about travel arrangements? Where are you going to stay between meetings? When you have a meeting on Sunday and a meeting on Wednesday, and you've got 2 days between, how are you going to finance that? How are you going to involve your family in ministry? Are your kids going to sing? Can your wife sing? If your wife can't sing, don't have your wife sing. It doesn't matter if your kids can sing or not. It just matters if they're cute. And all missionary kids are cute. But, you know, we counsel them. How do you prepare a presentation? Where do you get those really nice banners? All of those things in the first few months, we start training them to do. And so the church doesn't have to come up with that information. So we talk about that. And then, number eight, study for the future. 2 Timothy 2:15 says, study to show yourself approved unto God. That means give diligence to be approved to God. It means give diligence to what you're doing. So we have several things that we do to help the missionaries do diligence in preparing for the mission field. We have missionary training seminars by the board. We have an annual meeting of the board, field study, personal study. They read books. Every missionary has to come 2 years in a row for a week to what we call boot camp or orientation, where we go for a whole week. They come without their children for a whole week, and we go through everything with them. We train them. They come 1 year, then the next year they come again. They have to come twice. First year is about how to raise support and deputation. The second year is life on the field. And so we do that. We have a soul-winning seminar they come to once for a week, and it's boots on the ground. They're out soul-winning. We train them in something called the Exchange with Jeff Musgrave. Then also we have a week with Dr. Alan Griffith from Pennsylvania, wonderful former pastor, godly counselor. He comes and does a week of family conference, and they spend an intense week on how to help your family survive on the mission field. So we're doing all this training to help them during the time they're raising their support. Then number 9, they go out and solicit prayer and financial support. And that begins very quickly. We call it deputation. Now, the demands of deputation are 3. And if you want to write these down, you can. They're pretty easy to remember. The demands of deputation are call, call, and call. Okay? In other words, you as a missionary have to make contact with pastors for the purpose of getting in to present your burden. And if you don't do that, you won't get to the mission field. There are some younger missionaries who have started raising support through social media, trying to avoid going out to local churches. And you know what's happened? They get their support very quickly and they lose it even more quickly. Because social media will not provide a platform for long-term biblical relationships. That's the local church. So there is no substitute, and we don't allow our missionaries to raise support through social media. There is no substitute for you soliciting prayer and financial support through the local churches. So you call. That means you communicate effectively, both before the meeting and after the meeting. You've got to be a good communicator. Now, let me just go down a little rabbit trail here. We've got 3 more points, and we're going to make it in the next 5 minutes. When a missionary comes to you and their kids have just gotten out of the van for a 1,000-mile drive to get to you, and they're running everywhere, don't write them off as banshees. Have compassion on these people who are going through something very difficult for the purpose of honoring the Lord Jesus Christ. Just a little rabbit trail. Then number 10, sanctify your commission. Back in Acts 13, let's turn there, and we're almost done. Acts 13:3, and when they had fasted and prayed, they laid their hands on them and sent them away. We would call that a commissioning service. And it is a joy when a missionary has raised all of their support. It takes anywhere for a Baptist World missionary right now about 2.5 to 3 years to raise full support. And when they get that, We have a big celebration. The church has a service where the church lays hands on them. And many times we're invited to come and be a part of that. And what a blessing. The church commissions them to go. Then what is the first thing the missionary does? And there are a lot of variables within this. They need to study the language of the country where they're going. Now, a lot of our missionaries start language acquisition before they raise their support or during the support. There are programs like Babbel and others that you can use now to start learning. But there is no substitute for learning it on the field or in a place where they speak that, where you can have true immersion. Do you understand that if you do not learn the heart language of the people that you're going to minister to, you will not understand their culture, you will not understand their family structure, and you will not be able to communicate theological concepts to them in a way that God can bless His Word. Language acquisition is absolutely mandatory. So we require by policy that the first year of missionary service have either a full dedication to language acquisition, depending on the circumstances. Sometimes they do it part-time using a tutor because they may already have part of the language. We've got to get the language that first year. And then once they have the language, they set off for the field. They end up in their permanent location where they serve. And can I say in closing, it's there on the board. People ask, you know, and this is where the brokenness comes in. I've had people say, you know, this is broken. You know, a missionary having to take 2 to 3 years to raise support, we've got to find a better way. Did you know the average missionary coming with Baptist World Mission is in their early 30s? And if God blesses them and gives them health and life, they will have about 40 years of service on the field. So let's do the math. Is it worth taking 2 to 3 years to establish right relationships and do it right in order to have 37 years effective on the field? We have known missionaries who've tried to go out without doing the right things, and they get out to the field, they don't have their financial support, they haven't prepared, they don't survive 6 months to a year. That is not the way to do preparation for mission. So I have this little statement. Preparing to become a New Testament missionary takes time. This preparation in most cases will take a number of years, but the missionary who is properly prepared will be ready for a lifetime of service. And it is the joy of Baptist World Mission to facilitate these 12 steps. working with the church in helping their missionary get to the field and then be successful on the field. Now, furlough is simply reporting back to churches. And that happens in the book of Acts, Acts chapter 14 and 15. Paul came back to Antioch and he reported all the good things God had done. So when your missionaries do come back once every 4 to 6 years, sometimes missionaries take shorter furloughs, shorter amount of time, welcome them and rejoice with what God is doing from their ministry on the field. Let's pray together. We'll be finished.